Governor Larry Roden and Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen discuss the future of South Dakota politics. From SDPB, today is Wednesday, February 12th. This is In the Moment State House. Coming up this hour, the governor and lieutenant governor invited SDPB into the governor's office in the Capitol building and pier for a sit-down interview. We're going to bring you that conversation a bit later in the hour. We also have our Dakota political junkies today. Michael Card and John Hunter will talk about the transition from one governor to the next and what it means for South Dakota voters and for South Dakota state legislators. Plus, we also have SCPB's politics and public policy reporter, Lee Sturbringer, with us. We'll talk about the challenges of a new men's prison and how that is all playing out in Pierre. It is all coming up this hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. Welcome to In the Moment, the State House. I'm Lori Walsh here in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls, and joining me from SDN Communications Studio in the Capitol Building in Pier, we have our politics and public policy reporter, Lee Sturbringer. Lee, welcome back.
Hey, Lori.
Give me an idea, Lee, of what you are covering this week. What's standing out to you here in the State House?
I really wanted to do more of a deeper dive into what could possibly be like the largest financial appropriation that lawmakers will make in state history. And that has to do with the proposed men's prison in Lincoln County, kind of near Sioux Falls, would be. It's something that they've really been like working towards financing and getting off the ground for several years. And in this year in particular, there's a bill to see about authorizing that construction, and it's got a lot of support, and it's also giving a lot of lawmakers a lot of heartburn as well.
Yeah. All right. So are we hearing people who don't want it to be built at that location still? Is that still the challenge, or are we on to financial challenges? What's the pathway to this bill?
I guess I would first start by saying that this project has a price tag of no more than $825 million. Which is a lot for this particular legislature to really get behind and not have questions that go along with it. So I think the price tag itself is a bit of a sticker shock. And what they're basing that kind of shock from was a study and report that was done in about 2021 to 2022 that really was sort of the basis for this particular project idea. And they estimated that it would be somewhere around $350 million. So there's some discrepancy in that particular price tag. I mean, we've had a lot of inflation between then and now as well. But there's a lot of just kind of like, well, how did this get to this particular price that has a lot of people concerned? Yeah. The other part is also location to that particular spot. There's concern that it's not near a particular roadway, so the state would have to build a road out to this particular site. It's school and public land, and so in addition to the road, there would have to be utilities brought out there, et cetera. And so there's some question as to whether the location is proper as well. Mm-hmm. And then just sort of, there are other ideas kind of floating out there about what would be like maybe best to sort of address the kind of overcrowding prison system that we're currently experiencing.
All right. So we heard Governor Roden say in his first address to the state legislature that it's very, very important. And now we're looking at some of the details. Do they need to pay for it all up front? Because I know that was part of Governor Kristi Noem's budget address, was that money needs to come now. But this seems like the kind of price tag that would normally be spread out over time, and we would maybe incur some debt. What are you hearing about how they want to pay for it?
Well, how the administration wants to pay for it and how prior legislatures have viewed how they would finance this particular project is by setting up what they call the Incarceration Construction Fund. It's a fund that they've been putting a lot of money into. I believe it's up to about $560 million. And so that money is sitting in a pot. It's generating some interest. I think within the last year, it generated about $75 million in interest. And so there's still several hundred million short of that, and they're looking to do some money transfers and use some other kind of monies to really pay for this upfront to avoid bonding for this project. Because if the fear is that if they bonded for this particular project, it would end up costing the state a lot more down the road as opposed to just paying for this all upfront.
Right. What's the AAA bond for, though? Would be the folks who would be arguing for the bond would say that's why you have that credit rating, so that you can use it when there is an enormous project like this ahead of us. What are you thinking happens next here? What are you watching in the days ahead?
Well, we have the disadvantage of recording this a day before the House is set to have a full hearing. A House committee is set to have a full hearing on the bill to authorize the construction of this. And part of that authorization is transferring that pool of money that I was talking about into an area where they will be able to start financing this particular project. So lawmakers still have a lot of questions, and they're going to really be diving deeper into the specifics. And what will happen with that particular bill is they will send that to a committee that sets up the state budget. It's called the Appropriations Committee. They'll send it to the Appropriations Committee with a recommendation. They can do three different recommendations. They can send it to Appropriations with a do pass recommendation, do not pass recommendation, and no recommendation. And that sort of signals to that particular committee what at least that sort of issues-based committee thought about that particular proposal.
Right. All right. So we'll direct folks to sdpb.org/news for the latest update on this. Anything else that you wanted to say today, Lee, before we let you go back to work?
Yeah. I mean, in relation to this particular project, again, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of lawmakers, like I said, who have a lot of questions. There is some effort to want to put a pause on this particular project for now, and to do another interim study to sort of look at, is this the best option? What other options are out there that might be better or even cheaper in the long run? Because again, the current men's prison is over 100 years old. It was established before even statehood. And so this is something that the state will be not only utilizing for the next 100 years, but staffing for the next 100 years, et cetera. Yeah. And so are there better options on the table? Where the tension really is the fact that this price tag of $825 million, that's been set. It's not going to be there forever. And so there is kind of, do we lock in this price and get this project going now, or do we wait? And if we go with the similar idea of what's proposed now, will it cost even more down the road? So there's really a lot going on there in terms of what to do with this project and where it might be heading.
All right. We will keep our eyes peeled. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Yeah, of course.
Welcome to In the Moment State House. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota has a new governor and a new lieutenant governor. Our Dakota political junkies, Mike Card and John Hunter, stopped by the SDPB studios here in Sioux Falls for a conversation and their analysis. Mike Card and John Hunter, welcome back to the studio. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thanks, Lori.
It has been a whirlwind of political shifting, and yet we're in the middle of the legislative session. So in some ways, everything is just the same as the business of the state legislature goes on. We're going to play a sit-down interview with Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen and Governor Roden here in a moment on In the Moment State House. But I wanted to sit down with you first to talk about some of your early impressions about the transition and how this governor has come out of the gate saying this is what's going to be the same, this is what might be different, how people are responding to it. John Hunter, from your perspective, what are some of the first things that you have noticed about the shift?
The first thing, Lori, is that Governor Roden, I think, is trying to balance the Governor-Noem relationship and what he wants to do in the future. And that is a little bit of a delicate balance. Much of what he wants to do falls in line with what Governor Noem was doing. He wanted to portray himself as a loyal lieutenant governor, And she asked him to be loyal when she asked him to be lieutenant governor, and he wanted to live up to that promise. But he's also trying, he also wants to carve his own path a little bit too. So everything I have seen so far is trying to balance Governor Noem's priorities and his. And I think he's doing it pretty well. I think he's giving respect to where respect is due and now stretching out a little bit.
Yeah. Mike Card, what did you notice right away?
Well, I think Governor Roden noted that he was going to carry the bills forward that Governor Noem had proposed. Many of these were in bill form to make some cuts to a number of places in order to balance the state's budget given the projected shortfall. We'll find out this Thursday what the revenue projections are for at this late date. But I think he's trying to honor what she proposed, and he said that he was aware of what those decisions were, and he's going to carry the water as best he can. Some of those aren't going to be carried forward. We know the education savings account, or the vouchers, as the opponents would call them. The Senate Majority Leader has said there isn't support in the Senate for that, so they're just not going to go forward with it. So that may be dead. But, you know, I think it's right. He's trying to balance, as anyone, we hope anyone would do, is to balance your predecessor with your own vision of what should happen to move the state forward.
We also saw pushback in one of the education committees about the state library, and Secretary Graves sort of saying, well, this is with the new funding and the cuts, this is what the role of the state library would be, and legislators saying, no, we don't accept that, as, you know, we forward this on with a do not pass. So you see legislators pushing back on some of the cuts, at least. We've heard them say we were trying to restore some of the popular cuts. However, it's a tough revenue year, John, and those projections might be even dimmer than what was hoped for.
I do think those cuts will be restored. I think there are opportunities in other parts of the budget as well. Remember, too, we have a pre-funding of the prison construction is still in the hopper for $182 million. And to me, that doesn't make any sense to spend that all up front to prepay for the entire prison. I think there are many other state priorities. If I may, I want to shift back to these early impressions of Governor Roden, and that is really, it feels, at least in his inauguration speech and what we've heard so far, it's really about South Dakota. There were no mentions in his inauguration speech of any national issues. There was not any Biden-Harris. There was no southern border. There was no Israel. There was no anything about that. He talked about being a fifth-generation South Dakotan on his mom's side. He grew up here. He said he'll die here. He went to school here, all those things. And I think that is kind of a notable reaction or notable statement that he's making. It's like, look, I am South Dakota. And I, for those of us who have known him for a long time, believe that. That's who he is. I don't think he has any aspirations to try to impress someone out of state. Okay. So spent a lot of time in the legislature, right? Including 6 years as presiding officer of the Senate. And so I think he's well fit for, he understands South Dakota's topics and concerns, and I think he's ready to address them.
Yeah. One of the things that stood out to me was when he was talking about making things with your hands and enjoying the process of getting something started and seeing it come to completion through your own efforts. And I remember thinking that can't feel like that happens in politics very often. That has to be endlessly frustrating if that's the thing you find the most value in, is to take something from the beginning and shape it to the finish and hold it in your hand. That's like the opposite of the state house with how patient you have to be often, Mike, to see things through.
In your Tuesday in the Moment program, you talked with artists who talked about the art is in the making of the art, not in the finished product. And the finished product with legislation has to be compromises because there are 105 different voices. So the making of it is the coming together to what's reasonable as an outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think Governor Roden has set forth that that's what he wants.
There was a great moment when we were in the Capitol last week in the rotunda, and there was a family sitting on the steps, and our producer, Ari Youngman, was taking their picture, and little kids were there in their Sesame Street, you know, get-ups, and the governor came down the steps and just snuck up and photobombed the picture and shook hands with the kids, and I thought, he's having fun. Like, he, you know, he was smiling. They didn't know, of course, who the governor was. It was this, you know, kind of cool moment to watch. But watching the inauguration and the Grand March as well, they're also taking a moment to have a good time with the fact that this is a big deal for someone to rise to the highest office in South Dakota. Why not?
And a proud moment. I mean, to rise to that level, as you pointed out, is a moment of family pride and friends and those who've known Larry and his family all along. I think also he is, at least in his inauguration speech, embraced all of South Dakota, including tribal communities. He'd like to reopen those discussions and to talk with, I think, all parts of South Dakota, all geographies, all ways of life. He's off to a really good start, in my opinion. Now, you're thrown in halfway through the legislative session, and all of a sudden it gets hard. Let's just not sugarcoat that in any way. So people will be coming at him from all directions, and where he will support, there are things behind closed doors that will take place. But from a public, and I believe that he is sincere about all the words that he said. Yeah. And so that's, to me, that's important, because that's the focus of what he wants to do. And then when you get down to the nitty gritty, we may discover things are going to be different, but it's a good start.
It feels like this is all the nice things that anybody will ever say about you have been now said.
Yes.
It's not going to get any better than this, as far as like the love fest that goes on of those first days and those 4 weeks. What are you seeing in his selection of Tony Venhuizen as lieutenant governor that was significant for you, Dr. Card?
Well, I think part of it is he hasn't been a full-time lieutenant governor, unlike the past couple. And so he's got people around him who are well aware of what state government does and how it goes about doing it. Not that he didn't know from a legislative perspective, but he certainly now has people around him who can give guidance as to both what should be done and what needs to be done. And I think that's an excellent place, is you surround yourself with people who are, to the extent you can, that are better than you are, that know more than you do.
Yeah. And this is an appropriations year. This is the year where you want right by your side the person, somebody who knows a whole lot about appropriations.
Right.
John?
I think a key selection in that group is Matt Michaels. An experienced lieutenant governor, experienced in all. I just think he's a terrific politician, or at least administrator. I think that to me is more key than the chief of staff position for Larry Roden. Matt Michaels, the title is senior advisor, which means he doesn't have as many obligations, right? You can just kind of do whatever. But I think he's a key element to that. He knows the situation in Pierre. He knows the state. He was an experienced lieutenant governor. Probably could have been governor if he'd chosen to run. But I think that's a key element of him. But I think his staff and Tony, I think, is a good selection too. He certainly knows state government from his time as chief of staff twice under two different governors.
Right.
Briefly in the legislature, but experienced, you know, as a student regent when he was at school. So I think that's a good choice as well.
So a lot of people are asking, well, what does this mean for the next gubernatorial race? He said, no, you cannot, you know, glean anything from my selection of Lieutenant Governor Tony Venhuizen about what I will do next. It's not time to talk about that. Congressman Johnson has pushed aside, you know, a request to say, what are you doing next? He said before he'll probably run for governor, but then he said, no, we're all. So this is the moment where everybody focuses and says publicly that they are doing the job that the people have elected them to do, from attorney general to congressman to governor to lieutenant governor to senior advisor. And yet there are a whole lot of people who are trying to guess what everyone's ambitions are and how some of those pieces will get moved across the board. I'll be honest, that is not something that keeps me up at night. That's just not, I'm not the kind of person who does a lot of gamesmanship and guessing to who's going to announce and when and what that, you know, primary might look like. But having said that, what matters now is how all of these people legislate and how all of them do their jobs. Right. Are there things that you would need to lay down to say, if I do run for the next office or I do the next thing, I want to keep this promise or I want this to show up very well. It's not just about serving the public is what I'm saying. It's also about thinking about your political future. Any insight into how some of these folks think about their political future?
I don't know that it's any more than what you would expect. The Attorney General is being tough on crime and showing mm-hmm. that he's into openness and prosecuting those who would steal money from the state and being tough on drugs and mm-hmm. All of the things that you would expect an Attorney General who's running either for re-election or for a higher office to do. I don't think we've seen much from whether Tony Van Huysen has aspirations to be governor at this point or Matt Michaels. I don't think we've seen anything mm-hmm. from that. And Governor Roden said it's not time to think about it. Yeah. And for most campaigns, this is the quiet time. This is the time to get who's going to support me financially, who's going to support me with endorsements. And it's not open for public view. Mm-hmm. But that's what's going on behind the scenes.
Speaking of open for public view, let's touch on some reporting that we've seen in the Dakota Scout, which is still ongoing, about Governor Kristi Noem and Governor Dennis Dugard's credit card records not being open. I'll just refer everybody to the Scout for the actual reporting. But essentially, this desire, John Hunter, to know what Governor Kristi Noem was spending money on in her personal or her state-funded credit card. And as a journalist, how have you thought about this over the past, as you've talked with public officials about what they're spending, how they're spending it, and what we get to know about what they're spending?
Taxpayer funds, by law and by any ethic anywhere, should be available to the public. So if you or I spend government money on a new chair or something like that, that should be known to the public. There, for some reason, there's been this exception carved out for credit card expenses. It doesn't make any sense to me. If you go to open.sd.gov, you can see all sorts of South Dakota government expenditures, but the credit card expense will just say it goes to Visa for $50,000 a month or whatever that amount is. But the detail is not in there. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't matter what form it would be paid in, whether you pay something with a credit card or with a paper check. That shouldn't be the difference between whether it is open or closed. So, and as the world evolves, as more payments are made electronically, fewer are made by paper check. Does that mean this exception would grow? Mm-hmm. The truth is, if for Governor Noem, if she spends money on her salary or of her family money or anything else, that should be completely private. That's hers. She can spend it at whatever she wants. If you're spending state of South Dakota money on something, we should be able to know what it is. Now, whether we agree with it or not, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you can spend it on a new airplane. Remember how the controversial with sure. spending it on planes. So whether that's a good decision or not is not the issue here. The issue here is, did they spend money on an airplane? And now in the case of Governor Noem and the Dakota Scout reporting, credit card expenses, whether they're hotel or you go to Subway for lunch or whatever, doesn't really matter. It should be open to the public, regardless of what form it is.
Right. Mike, anything you would add about the importance of open government or what might happen next as this sorts itself out through the courts?
Well, almost every elected official puts a claim on being the most transparent or the most open. And if some things aren't, it brings a question of, well, why aren't these open? And that then raises questions about, well, what's being hidden? Because if you can't see it, then what is going on here? And I think the transparency of, you know, how the state spends its money and who directs that, those are things that just should be open.
Yeah. And do they get approved? Who approves the individual subway or hotel room or monthly, you know, limits on that? Who approves that? Because as we look at cutting and we look at revenues being down, people are going to want to know whether those expenses were reasonable in a time of fiscal responsibility.
A very important point. I'm glad you brought it up, Lori, because the issue of control, especially as we've seen in South Dakota, lack of some controls of that, there should be some control of everything. Now, whether it's approved by someone or even just by policy, mm-hmm. a policy is a different form of control. It doesn't have, the governor wouldn't have a superior who she would have to ask if she could do this, but there should be some sort of policy that said, for most state employees, if you stay at a hotel, it has to be at the state rate or whatever, right?
Yes, and, it does.
let's say there's an exception for the governor that she can stay at nicer places or more secure places or whatever it is. That's fine, but there should be a policy for that. And at the very least, there should be a budget. You say, look, here's the governor's travel budget. It's $1 million for this year. Can't exceed that. Now, if you choose to spend it in one city and versus another, that's within the logical parameters of an executive. They could choose how to spend that budget. But once that budget is approved by the legislature and signed by the governor, yeah. it should be held. Yeah. So what happens underneath there, you should have some flexibility in the budgets to say, look, we're gonna go to Memphis instead of Tulsa this year. Mm-hmm. So, but there should be some sort of control to your point, Lori.
Yeah. All right. Well, you mentioned the prison. We'll have a lot more reporting this week from Lee Strubinger on that because we're going to know more about that in the days ahead, revenue in the days ahead. And we're going to take a break and come back with some of that interview with Governor Roden and Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen. John Hunter and Michael Card, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks, Lori.
John Hunter is publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader. He's a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Michael Card is professor emeritus of political science at the University of South Dakota. They are our political junkies for the day. Welcome to In the Moment Statehouse on SDPV. I'm Lori Walsh. Governor Larry Roden is now at South Dakota's helm. Lieutenant Governor Tony Van Huysen is right by his side. They invited SDPB into the governor's office in Pierre for an introductory interview. Let's meet the new governor and lieutenant governor.
We've focused a lot on agriculture and industries that support agriculture, and I think we will continue to focus a lot on that. But we've also, cybersecurity. Our university system has made that a big priority, and I think that's one of the next big things for South Dakota, cybersecurity and some of that technology. Agriculture will continue, always has, and will continue to get a lot of attention because we have, I think it's a simple fact that ag will always be king in South Dakota, but it also accentuates the fact that we need to diversify. We are very dependent on ag, and we have a downturn in the ag economy and markets or drought. It very significantly impacts us as a state. So we need to continue to look for more ways to diversify, to add value to agriculture. In this last year, 2 years, we started the South Dakota Office of International Trade. That's one area we were lagging far behind in South Dakota. And I was pretty excited when Luke Lindberg took the bull by the horns and created the Office of International Trade. Been on two or three trade missions. We went one to Mexico last year, was our first trade mission, hugely successful. And my first trade mission that I had led as lieutenant governor, and I was pretty apprehensive about it, and when I got there, I was blown away by how well we were received, and the people that come, industry leaders from the nation of Mexico, public officials, they all were just anxious to meet with us from South Dakota and look for areas that we could increase trade. We've had, I think, at last I heard, something like an 80-to-1 return on investment from that trip. And so I could go on and on, Japan, Taiwan, we visited those countries and huge success stories out of that. And I think I'm pretty optimistic about that part as far as helping the economy in South Dakota and expanding our trade.
I want to go back to something in your history with your family's military history and your time in the National Guard. You've been opposed to legislative efforts to restrict the ability to deploy the National Guard in new ways. People would like to know, what criteria will you deploy the National Guard, whether it's, you know, for flooding in South Dakota or emergency response here, or how do you see the role of the National Guard going forward in national and international deployments?
Well, you know, we have troops, we've had troops deployed every day that I'm of the Noam Roden administration, and I don't think, given the cards that are on the table, that's going to change anytime soon as far as the troops are nationalized. As far as our deploying troops in South Dakota, we'll take it as it comes. It just depends on the circumstances and what's happening on the ground at the time.
Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen, you were with the Dugard administration when those departments were split from Military and Veterans Affairs because of the way you said at the time the National Guard's mission in America was changing. That was 2011. And it's continued on that pathway. Are there other things that either one of you see in those departments that we need to do more for the state's veterans, either with a veterans home on the east side of the state, for example, or are there other areas that you think we need to beef up the way we care for South Dakota veterans?
Well, there's always conversation about that. You know, the decision to split those departments back then was really about the fact that the mission of the National Guard and the mission of the Veterans Affairs Office were very different. Veterans Affairs is a service agency helping our veterans get service. They run the state veterans home. The job was completely different than the job of the National Guard. And the idea was to really put more focus on serving veterans, and I think that's been a success. You know, since that time, there's the new veterans home in Hot Springs has been built. The state veterans cemetery just north of Sioux Falls has been built. And I know there are always more ideas to serve veterans, but I think splitting those departments was the right move.
Anything you wanted to add to that, Governor?
I don't believe so.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about tribal communities, because you said in your first address to the joint legislative session that you wanted a reset. And Lieutenant Governor, you've been saying for a long time, we cannot paint our tribal communities with one broad brush. What does a reset look like for you, Governor Roden, and what are some of the specific areas that you feel the need is great? I'm thinking of health disparities. Your Secretary of Health recently had a report talking about the life expectancy being decades apart from white South Dakotans and American Indian South Dakotans. She said that's jaw-dropping. So a little bit about what the reset is, and then how do we as South Dakotans address some of those issues, please?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the question. We just... just an hour ago, we're across the hall in the governor's large conference room, meeting with the chairman and members of the Oglala Sioux tribe. And they requested a meeting after hearing my joint address. And we had an extremely good meeting. I was heartened by the conversation we had there. We went around the table and we just had discussions about putting the past behind us, and I reminded him of what Governor Noam had said just a few weeks ago, and then Chairman Renville repeated in the State of the Tribes address, it's time to reset, it's time to rebuild. And I was sincere in that, and they recognized that. We had a very good back and forth discussion about, you know, some of the kind of low-hanging fruit of things that we can do to get started. Law enforcement being one. Memorandums of understanding or mutual aid agreements, I think is what they refer to them now. I told them, you know, the story of where I'm from in the middle of Meade County. My brother's a deputy sheriff and chasing bad guys to the edge of the reservation and then have to back off. I says it makes no sense. It's like he's herding criminals onto the reservation and then has no choice but then to let them go. And I think there was strong agreement that there's areas that we can work on there with memorandums of understandings. We've already made some progress in allowing tribal members or inviting them to be take law enforcement training at our facility. You mentioned medical, and even in Western South Dakota, there's a lot of issues with the brand inspection, because the reservations are a patchwork of deeded land and reservation land, and so there are a lot of cattle herds that travel in and out of those areas, and it's very necessary we'd be able to brand inspect in those areas, and there's never been a memorandum of agreement or to allow that to happen. So there's a lot of room for improvement. I think we recognize that. We also recognize and acknowledge that we were going to work at rebuilding the trust between the nation, government to government relations, and so I was very encouraged.
Yeah. What did they say they wanted from you? Was there a specific ask? There's a lot of generalities of, you know, resetting and communications and keeping doors open, memorandums of understanding. Was there something they said, we really need this?
Well, help with law enforcement. I think that's a pretty direct ask. You know, they recognize they have a problem. And so I think that's a generalized ask, but it's significant. And I think I'm pretty optimistic that, you know, we're already moving in that direction, and I think we can continue to work on that.
Rural South Dakotans are increasingly concerned with the infant mortality rate and the maternal health problems that we see in the state. Have you talked to your Secretary of Health about initiatives that might address some of those numbers in a measurable way?
This is like my 11th day on the job as governor, and I have not had those kind of conversations with hardly any of my cabinet at this point. And we're in the middle of session, and got our hands full.
Right, yeah. I want to bring up the property tax issue, because you mentioned earlier in our conversation about ag taxes, and that was something you had worked on before, sort of reclassifying ag property and taxes. How is that informing the conversations you're having now about property taxes?
Well, I think, that was old history. That was 15 years ago, I think, now that we went to an ag productivity system. Now we're having a distinct problem with owner-occupied because of the inflated values of housing in certain areas that have shot up. I refer back to that because there's a lot of similarities in the circumstances in different ways. And so I've used that as a kind of a model of what happened back then. And we had our first meeting with stakeholders sent from both the House and Senate chambers just a few days ago. That was a very productive conversation. I was very encouraged by that. You know, we're looking at the best approach to taking action that goes right to the point of the problem. The people that are hardest hit by the circumstance they're in right now, and how to structure that. So it obviously we don't have a lot of leeway in our budget. We already made something like $60 million in cuts in different areas in our budget. And we're gonna get some updated numbers shortly. But I don't think there's any really good news coming over the pipe from what I've heard. So we've got a distinct set of circumstances, like I said in my speech. You know, we'll look at, I'm ready to have open discussions with our budget office on, you know, trying to restore cuts that we made, but it's a zero-sum game. Unless revenues increase, doesn't look like they will, then it's a zero-sum game. If you restore cuts one place, you have to increase cuts someplace else. So it's going to be interesting to see how the session progresses, what our numbers are, but I kept holding out hope that our December numbers or the Christmas season numbers, what we'll be getting updated on, would be better than what I think they're going to show.
You know, and I would just add, there's nobody in this building, maybe nobody in the state, who has more history working on property tax than Larry Roden. That's been an issue he's worked on as long as he's been in this Capitol. And there are a lot of people in the legislature who have different ideas about how to address the problem. When I was in the House, I had my own ideas about how to address the problem, and I represented a part of the state in Sioux Falls that is one of the hot spots for these increases. But we're really very fortunate to have the governor here to lead this discussion, because we're bringing these people and these ideas together and trying to get to a package that, you know, we're all, the sum of the parts is going to be greater than each of us individually, and we're really on a good track, I think.
You mentioned singing in a men's group. Tell me about the role of the arts in your family's life.
The what?
The role of the arts.
The arts. Is that an art, singing?
Yes. Singing in a men's choir counts you as an artist.
Okay. Well, I never got paid to do it, so I don't think. Well, yeah, I always liked, you know, I like singing, and I had a couple of guys in the church that, you know, I've listened to them sing, and one of them had just a killer tenor voice, and I remember, it would have been about 30 years ago now that I have an older brother who's a deputy sheriff, so two of us and our pastor and another guy that started a men's quartet, we used to travel quite a bit and sing at a lot of different places. Of course, the one guy, the high tenor, he was a rancher, but he had really long hair, and he's a skinny little guy and didn't look like a rancher. So before we end up being called the circuit riders, but before we had a name, they called us three rednecks and a hippie. So, but yeah, we had a lot of fun just traveling and singing gospel music, and it was a pretty good mission, I thought.
Lieutenant Governor, the arts, how do they intersect with your family's life?
Well, my mom is a great artist. She's an oil painter and does landscape painting, and I'm very proud of her. She does good work, and I, through her, have met other South Dakota artists and like to buy South Dakota art paintings. I unfortunately didn't inherit any of Mom's artistic talent, but you know, we're a musical family too. I'm a singer, and my kids sing, and they're in the, you know, I'm the age where my kids are 12, 10, and 8. So when I'm not doing this, I'm going to jazz band concert, the show choir contest, you know, the volleyball game. This is my life when I'm not here in Pierre.
So what is the role of state government in supporting the arts and culture in the state? How do you see your leadership role there?
You know, I haven't looked into it much.
I feel like we should close talking about work, because you spoke eloquently about work on the ranch and work ethic. And I mean, I know that you, from a policy standpoint, saying work is not a punishment, work is, you know, a gift is what you said. But just in general, where was your idea about work and work ethic formed? Where did you see those examples, and how did they influence you?
Well, I think, I think the answer is pretty clear. Growing up on a small family farm like we did, a very diversified, we don't remember how diversified family farms now, because everything's gotten so big, and you're a wheat farmer, or you're a corn farmer, or you're a pig farmer, or you run a dairy. When I grew up, it was all of the above. We had dairy cows, we had beef cows, we had sheep, we had pigs, we had chickens, you name it, we had them, and they were all a source of revenue. And we didn't have a lot of anything, but so when I grew up as a child, I can remember before I was in grade school, we milked, you know, I think at that time we had 13 dairy cows. They were all milked by hand, and then we separated the cream, and the cream went to Sturgis, and that bought our groceries, and the skim milk went in a big 50-gallon barrel with barley, and it made sour mash to feed to the hogs. But the point to all that is, even from the time I was 4 years old, I was doing chores and I was contributing. And as you got older, your chores got more complicated. And then you're on the tractor. I think I was 8 years old when I was driving an 8N Ford pulling a 9-foot mower in the hayfield. So you just learned that work ethic at a very, it was just instilled in you from the time you were little on growing up. And I think it's especially in men, I think it's that might sound sexist, but it's really not. I think it's wired in our DNA a little more that, you know, the value of work and your self-worth. And I think it's good for the soul for people to build stuff from start to finish. And for me, just to build a project and see the finished project and then see it being used, that's very fulfilling to me. And so that's just the way I was brought up.
Did your dad ever talk to you about his military service?
He did. I grew up, when I was the youngest son, so I spent a lot of time with my father, but he would talk about it when we were working and it reminded him of a story. And I still remember a lot of those stories because some of them were pretty humorous, some of them not. He was in a company that liberated a very notorious death camp. And I recall him telling stories that would bring you to tears. But it was at a time when all the neighbors in that area had served as well. So when they got together, you talked about that a lot. You'd hear them, you know, they would open up with each other and hear the stories. And of course, they had uncles that were also in World War II. So, yeah.
And he's part of this battle of the Bulge that, yeah. I mean, he saves the world. It's not an exaggeration to say he's part of a group of American and Allied soldiers who get Hitler on the run after this battle.
Yep. There are pictures in there of, you know, prisoners of war. Dad sent home a lot of stuff that was he collected at the end of that Battle of the Bulge because that was Germany's last gasp, and so they were surrendering en masse after that battle was over. And he had some pretty hilarious stories about going to a farmyard to, because they were bivouacked after the battle, and he went out to collect food for, you know, find something fresh to eat other than sea rations. He said they left their Jeep, and he had a 30 caliber carbine strapped to his back and knocked on the door, and the door opened, and German soldiers started marching out single file. He said, I about strangled myself to death trying to get my 30 caliber carbine off my back, and they were surrendering.
Oh, that's quite a legacy to grow up with, too. Thank you for telling that story. Anything else you want to leave the people of South Dakota with as you go into the days ahead? How can everybody be on the same team going forward for the state, for example?
Well, I am absolutely blown away by the opportunity to serve as governor of the state. Never really thought about being in this role, but the last week and a half has just been amazing. And I very much look forward to getting to work, getting our team going again. They've hit the ground running, and it's been historic to try and do this in the middle of session. But so far, I'm just extremely encouraged at how well our team has functioned, and it was seamless going through this transition phase.
That was South Dakota Governor Larry Roden and Lieutenant Governor Tony Venhuizen. You can watch the full interview on SDPB TV on Thursday, February 20th at 8 p.m. Central, 7:30 Mountain Time. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for being with us.